Hello, clients, and thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV's coverage of Better Call Saul Season 3, Episode 7. We're going to talk about it right here and next.
You're tuning in to the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
It's Monday. We're here. This music's nice and chill.
It's the sounds of Monday.
It's the sounds of 10 p.m. Monday. We're here to talk about Better Call Saul, Season 3, Episode 7, Expenses. I'm your host, Steve Kaufman. You can find me on Twitter, at Steve Kaufman. That is K-A-U-F-M-A-N-N. But I'm not alone. We aren't full strength this week.
We are not.
Rick is a little under the weather. Get well soon, Rick. Get well. See, he's not that sick, guys.
No, he's not dying.
He's not dying. Get well at your own pace.
He's trying to keep us from getting sick.
Yes. And Lucretia is covering the Supergirl finale while we make this time change.
Not with us, unfortunately.
So we're at 50%.
Doing the two-man special.
We're still going to do the two-man special, I think. Some of my favorite shows have been two-man shows.
That's right.
We just go for it.
I'm here with Steve, guys. This is Nate Miller. Hey, After Buzzers. You can find me on social media at DogLikeNate. And we're going to get into it.
Yeah. So we were talking last week about how there was a lot of finality to last week's episode versus this week's episode, where there seems to be, I don't want to say a holding pattern, but there seems to be a lot of resetting.
Definitely. And I think what we got a lot of, as we'll talk about later, but especially from Jimmy, is seeing all of the changes that have happened. Not only have we seen the aftermath now, but we're seeing the repercussions of the aftermath, how it, in the long term, it's actually affecting Jimmy.
Which I really enjoy. And we could just jump right into Jimmy.
Sure.
Doing community service on his cell phone.
I just want to say, you know, I always say, one of my favorite things about the show is how good it looks. And that first shot was just beautiful with them on the building and the way they all kind of arrived and lined up. And it looked almost like a lineup kind of a thing. And I just thought that was fantastic, especially when you didn't even know what they were lining up for until then you see the building.
This TV show and then Breaking Bad before it is some of the best filmmaking on television.
100%.
Like, yeah. True, like, every frame's a masterpiece.
I've got a couple more shout-outs here in my notes, but this episode especially, there's been a few episodes this season that I think have had even more shots than normal that I think are very notable, but this one I think did a really good job of using them for story purpose, as they almost always do, but especially
and then
in this episode.
And on that shot, specifically how small Jimmy is.
Right,
comparison, just a giant wall, and then, like, perspective.
And he's also just, like, you know, we know Jimmy as the smart guy he is, all the things he's done and stuff, but you know, to the outside world, to the, you know, community service guy, he's just some other bum who has community service hours that he has to do. He's just, you know, there with everybody else.
And then the Parks and Rec foreman as well. There is a level of people like to cling to what little authority they get in life,
right?
And you know, if you're gonna run the site, I guess. I don't know, it gives them enough rope to hang themselves with. It's like, you're on your phone. It's not my job to come and tell you to not be on your phone.
Right. And he did, and I'm glad that they, you know, once again, no wasted shots. They lingered on the contract, you know, not long enough for you to read it, but enough to see its community service, and obviously he didn't read it, and, you know, he goes about his business doing what
he
was supposed
to do. Coerced into not reading it, which...
Lawyer Jimmy would try to dispute, I'm sure, but...
Well, yeah, I'm that guy too. That if somebody makes me read something, or if somebody makes me sign something, I'm going to read it in full.
Yeah.
I'm just fortunate I've read enough waivers and disclosures that I know that, like...
Yeah, you can skim through them and get the
Because the paragraphs
are...
They're
almost all copy and pasted from somebody else.
Well, I've been on some sets where it's like, oh, I know exactly where you copy and pasted this.
Yeah.
Good for you. You changed nothing. I know this exact NDA. I'll gladly sign this.
But I felt bad, you know, especially, you know, I just did community service recently.
Okay.
And I know how the hours just drag on. And so to be there for 4 hours and then you get credit for 30 minutes is pretty brutal. But at the same time, the reaction of the rest of them in the back of, like, you know, when he's trying to rally them and they're like, you know, are you just going to get on the bus? It makes sense because, again, it's this thing of, like, you don't get special treatment because of, you know, who you are and what you've done in the past. Because
he only turned to the people behind him in line when it was his problem.
Exactly.
Although I'm not a huge fan of any situation like that where you having a legitimate problem becomes everyone behind you. Like, they... the institution sets up a way where you're
the problem, even though you're just trying to speak up.
You're the problem for speaking up. Like I'm not a fan of anything that's set up that way.
Right.
But I think I have a long-standing problem with authority. So that's probably some of my stuff.
Yeah.
But Jimmy McGill, things aren't going well.
No.
Saul Goodman, things are going okay. Not great.
I don't know. I would disagree. I think even on that front, he's struggling. You know, we see him in his routine of finishing up his community service, rushing out with the handy wipes, and, you know, when he gets to...
the film school.
Right. I don't think it's even a film school. I think it's like a... I didn't read the sign.
I think it's the
local community college, which I thought was a fantastic... touch that they actually picked them up.
Speaking
from
as a filmmaker who graduated from a community college, that's an amazing touch.
Yeah, which fits their crew perfectly too. But when he gets there, and just like having, you know, for the show going on for as long as it has, and seeing the different situations in which Jimmy can talk people into things, and knowing how persuasive he is, and seeing the desperation on his face, and when he really is—he's giving it everything he can because he has no other option. And watching him fall flat on his face is really unfortunate.
And I think we get into it a lot. We'll get into it a lot on our third topic. But he's not a salesman.
No, he's not.
He's a con man.
Right, and which are similar, but not the same.
They're similar traits, different because a salesman like Jimmy's trying to be in this episode cannot have desperation, cannot have a whiff of desperation, cannot have like an inkling of desperation.
Because then it makes you look deeper. And also too, you know, in the difference of a salesman and a con man, at the end, they're getting a product, but they're not really getting what he's telling them that they're getting. And while a salesman may upsell something, they may kind of push it, at the end of the day, you're getting what they're selling you. You may pay more for it than you should be, but you're getting the product. Whereas
also,
with Jimmy, he's legitimately trying to pull one over on you.
Well, especially because as a salesman versus a con man, a salesman does have to deliver.
Right.
And a salesman, especially in Jimmy's position as Saul Goodman, commercial director and salesman, he's only going to make his money if people buy like 6, 7, 8 commercials. All the commercials do well. He can get a client list. Like that's completely different from a con man who what he's selling is nothing.
Well, another thing I realized with the way that he was, you know, making these deals and the way he keeps trying to unload the full, you know, weight of the commercials he has left. I still don't think for him that this is like a sustainable business in his mind, that this is something that he's going to be able to like create a client list and keep going. I think he is still just trying to like make as much money back that he already sees as lost as possible.
Yeah.
And so that's why at any opportunity he's like, well, how about you upgrade and just get the rest of them? Cause he doesn't want to be finding clients and booking the rest of them out and like starting. And that's just the way I see it.
I feel like he didn't have that many commercials. That here we are weeks later where he made more commercials. I think he's buying more time.
You think so?
I think he's using the money to buy more time to sell more commercials. Like I think his whole thing is that he can walk into a TV studio and say, I'd like these spots every day. What for? Don't worry about it.
That's interesting. I'll have to look and see if there's some type of clarification, because the only reason why I would think that that's not the case is because of when the guys at the music store talk about the time slot, it still sounds like the time slots that he had from before.
That is true. Well, but he could have just re-upped his current contract.
Right.
Either or.
But
yeah,
if you are trying to go in the commercial route, you know, for basically any business outside of elder law, that's really not a good time slot. That's going to make it difficult for yourself. So that's the only reason why it could be that way, that he eventually started picking up more time slots. But I don't think that much time has passed, because I believe before he had like 9 weeks he was trying to unload or something, and now it was 7, I believe.
That, you might be right on that.
So I think it hasn't been that long.
That could be.
I could be mistaken, though.
That's fair. That's fair, but I'm right. No, I have no idea. I think I see him having an entrepreneurial enough spirit that he would possibly buy more commercial time.
But now that I think about it,
he doesn't have any more money.
Exactly, and I just don't think that he's been like successful in it to the point of where he has that turnover in his head of like, oh shit, I can make money off this. I think he's still acting out of desperation and just, you know, grabbing the resources he has to just try and recover, especially when we see him, you know, later in the malpractice insurance place, even though obviously we find out he's not really having a breakdown. I still think that there is a lot of real stress there, especially when him with him finding out that, like, he's just not going to get his money back from these people.
Yeah.
So he's losing on all of these fronts. That being said, if, you know, we do get some type of turnaround and a win with the commercial business and him with the crew, I could definitely see that him becoming, like, going fully into that, especially with his interaction with the crew. And that's why I really liked the when the makeup girl,
the makeup girl offered to give him the money.
Obviously
back.
Saw that he was struggling.
And actually, I'm more on your side now too, that he clearly isn't an entrepreneur either. Because at the very least, like with the Sklar brothers, shout out to the Sklar brothers getting on Breaking Bad.
I love those guys, the twins. I love them.
Oh, they're the fact that he just, like, hey, we're already here, just let's shoot this commercial for free.
Yeah,
just
the way that he said free, like he didn't even go. He choked on it. Like he like free. Hearing Jamie McGill say he's gonna do something for free, but more than that, hearing Saul Goodman saying he's gonna give something for free. Was like, wow, that was really when it's like, wow, he's really hurting.
And me that does sales day to day kind of cringed a little because I'm like,
I mean, even when, like, he went to 50% off, that's 50%, desperation.
Like 50% off, he wants to make the spot, make like cover his overhead free. The salesman in me was like, so you're going to draw up a contract where you use a buzzword or a promo code or some type of way to track the commercial. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you would do in a larger marketing firm situation, but even, I don't think that is even on his radar.
But even on a smaller local level.
For sure. I think that that would be a great idea, and I think, I don't know if maybe that's what their plan was, because the armchair guy was mentioning that if you mention this commercial, you get 10% off, so I don't know if maybe they already had something like that in place.
Yeah. You would hope there was some type of call to action in place,
right, so that they can get some type of a gauge of how much business they actually get. But even commercial,
but even then it's one thing the armchair guy paid full price for the one commercial, whereas the Sklar brothers paid zero.
Right,
so it's on them to actually, if there even was a setup tracking, it's on them to actually report it,
yeah, to follow through,
which would be dependent on how much we think they're good business people, which I don't know, just sales me, if I talk to them on the phone and agreed on a number, and then I bring my whole crew out, and then they're trying to say, nah, just zero.
Yeah, nothing, not anymore.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no. That's why you get a contract.
Oh, no, you owe me 50%.
Yeah, or you get
I rolled a truck, sir.
Yeah.
I do casino rental. We roll trucks. We get 50% up front. But I didn't see it from this way until just now, that he's just trying to dump that commercial time to get some money and then try to do something else.
Yeah, I think he, on top of feeling the pressure of the stress and, like, trying to figure out how he's going to pivot, I think with his relationship with Kim, too, is really straining on him, because they've been through so much lately, and he's already let her down so often. And, you know, they just had this, you know, quote-unquote win together, which they haven't really had in a long time. Yeah. So to go off of that to being like, hey, I'm draining all my bank accounts, like, I'm losing a bunch of money right and left, I'm not recouping, this is not working for me, everything's going downhill, you know, if he had said that from the beginning and they had talked about it, maybe they could have tried to work something out. But at this point, because he's already lied about it and played coy, he's just
told her he can float that giant office for one client between two people and one lawyer.
Yeah,
like, it is a little ridiculous.
It's just not realistic. Yeah.
Speaking of ridiculous, that's a weird segue, but I'll stick with it. Price is back. Price is the pharmacist guy.
Yes, I'm terrible with names.
I'm also,
I love him.
The caption helped me remember his name.
I was really hoping, did he get rid of the Hummer? Did he finally get rid of it?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, at least he wasn't driving it. He wasn't driving it when he went to see Mike tonight.
Right. Well, and that's why I was half expecting, when Mike walked into the parking lot and then obviously saw something, I was half expecting him to be in the Hummer still.
But I think,
thankfully, he was not.
Thankfully, in season two, he learned his lesson about if you're going to do you're going to do illegal.
Right, because he did say he was trying. So I think, you're right.
You're going to do illegal stuff.
So he probably still has the Hummer, but he left it at home and rented, like, the van or something.
I hope he got rid of the Hummer. It's just, like, such terrible gas mileage. Like, he's a numbers guy.
I don't know, man. I think he really liked it. In my head canon, he still has the Hummer.
He was still wearing that ridiculous watch.
Yeah, and he still was supremely concerned about his baseball cards.
He wants them back.
Yeah, it's. I mean, we talked about this last week about Nacho, and we saw the pill, and we definitely, you know, obviously it was some type of poison or something coming. So we see for sure.
We know the grand plan for Nacho. 100%
what the plan is.
I think we're learning now that the plan isn't just to take the one pill and then supplant it out.
He wants to swap them.
He wants to swap all the capsules.
We don't know what he wants to swap them for.
And then make a poison of some type. Yeah. We know Hector lives through whatever's about to happen.
And he lives in some way or form.
Yeah, like...
Yeah, he doesn't... The job is not complete. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I just love... I loved Mike in this whole part.
I mean, another fantastic shot you get when he crosses over to check the car, which I 100% thought there was going to be a tracker in
Me
there.
Me too.
Because, you know, it's Gus. Luckily, there wasn't.
Mm.
But you just see Mike, and it's just pitch black all around him. They just have that one slice of light on his face. And just because he's wearing black, it just looks like his head is just, like, floating out of nowhere. And it just looks so ominous in the way... And he tells him. And that's the other thing, too, is not only does he look the serious and, you know, you get that great delivery that he has, but just the way in which he... This is why I love Mike, because he's so practical and methodical in the way he thinks about and approaches things. Like, the advice that he gives Nacho, just the way that he says it, even knowing that he's going to go kill someone, you know, and all this stuff. Obviously, Mike is not, like, a squishy guy, you know, very emotional, but just the way that he delivers, like, you know, well, just make sure you switch it afterwards. Like, because he was a cop. He knows, you know, what the process is going to be afterwards. He's thinking ahead.
And I also love that, and this has been Mike this entire time, that Mike isn't someone who would do a job poorly.
No, and that's why, because he's always and this is why I think, you know, obviously Walter and Mike get along, I think you could say, but they have this ability to not just look at what they're doing, but look at what comes after and look at what are the other possibilities of what might happen. Everything that they do is planned out. So I'm very curious to see how he gets more involved with what happens, because I don't think that we've seen the last of his interaction with Nacho. I think that there's got to be some type of hiccup or something.
Well, and I'm sure, I wouldn't be shocked if Gus being Gus somehow finds out about, like, somehow catches a whiff of this and then comes directly to Mike.
I could see,
there's
I
an
could
implied
see,
respect there to
well,
Mike.
Well, I could see Mike even going to Gus, and I don't know about if he would tell him what was going on, but maybe, you know, mentioning something, maybe kind of like hinting at something. I could see him, because of that implied respect that they have, especially because, you know, he knows that he doesn't want him dead. Well, he knows that Gus doesn't want him dead from Mike killing him, because that would be too easy, right?
So well, he doesn't want to, because I think Hector, we were talking about this, that Hector runs the street part of the drug game in that world.
Well, what
so
Gus,
he doesn't want Hector to die in a way that would create a power vacuum in the street part, because Gus doesn't want the street part.
Did they say that?
They didn't say. I think that had been the Gus Hector relationship this entire.
I can
the,
see that.
Like the
I
Gus
can,
cartel.
Yeah, I can see how that would play out, but I haven't noticed anything that would lead me to that assumption.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I could definitely see Mike going to Gus, because I'm just operating off what Gus said of, like, you know, I do want him dead. It's just you shooting him with the sniper from that, you know, Payless is too good for him. So I could see Mike getting wind of this and going, hey, look, this is going to happen whether you like it or not. You know, is a painful poison death okay?
They played with time a little here. It's possible Mike could have already had that meeting.
This is true.
That
he could have gone, because we do, and that's the other thing I want to talk about while we are talking about Mike, is I don't know where this switch came from, where he went from when he was originally talking to him and
obviously, it was the Anita conversation.
First of all, he wasn't industry. Right, but what, and that's what I'm wondering is what about that conversation changed his mind? Because when he initially went, he wasn't interested at all.
Mm-hmm.
Then he found out it was about Nacho, so he goes, well, I'm somewhat close to that situation from the past, so maybe I should hear what's going on. Hears about the pill. Obviously, being the smart guy he is, he knows somebody's getting poisoned,
yeah, yeah.
Somebody's getting killed. I don't want anything to do with this. Then, out of nowhere, I mean, obviously it's not out of nowhere. I just don't see the connection. And it obviously, I mean, maybe it'll be revealed to us.
I'm hoping it's a little revealed because maybe I was just a little dense on this scene. But the Mike and Anita scene in, you and I were talking about this before we went on the air. What we have to assume is a support group for people who've lost loved ones. But that's never been explicitly stated. And it's the second time we've seen this support group, which is leading me to believe that this is a support group for something completely different, or just a general support group.
I think it's intentionally vague. I don't think it's a general. I think it is going to be a specific, either she had a drug problem or a drinking problem or like an abuse problem maybe or something like that. I think it's going to be something that's going to have some type of story impact on, you know, her past and Mike's past.
And then explain who Anita is and why she's there.
Right.
And I just didn't see anything in that conversation that made Mike change his mind other than the realization that maybe that conversation helped him realize this is who I am. And that if I don't do this, no one else will. Like, there's
I can see that.
Like, and to a certain extent, like, there's a reason, and this might just be off on his own motivation, that there's a reason Price came to Mike. Because it's like, I want a job done correctly. If you want a job done correctly in this world, you go to Mike.
Well, I think...
You call Saul, but then you get Mike.
It's also his experience, though, I think, too. Mm. Because, you know, that's who he knows. And that's who he also knows, like you said, knows how to do it right. He's not going to get ripped off or anything.
And I think that's the ultimate turn he made was... But Price, I also Price think doesn't know anyone else that can... Price doesn't know anyone else who will walk in and get this instant respect from Nacho. Who can then have the authority to come in and say, I'm not gonna give you the pills unless I know your plan front to back.
But that's the other thing too, is that he already knows that Mike knows Nacho.
Yeah.
So that's another reason why he's a comfortable choice for the security, you know, middleman role.
I'm interested to see where we go here, because Nacho's not Walter White, like it's not gonna be Ryson.
Yeah.
Like, what's going to be in this pills? Does he mess up the dosage? Is he able to swap the pills in time?
Does Hector just
get hit by a bus?
I don't think, you know, I could definitely see that happening. Him, like, he's like, switches the pills out and, like, he goes outside or something and just gets hit by a car and never takes the pills. I could definitely see that happening in this show.
And Marvelous 24 ounce. 24OZ, I don't want to make assumptions on your name. She said that Anita said that they never found the body. So maybe the idea of that mystery. Maybe the idea of that mystery is what got to Mike.
They never found the body of her husband?
Yes. Right? Yeah, that would be.
I could.
That maybe that wasn't. It was just something to make a quick spark in Mike's mind.
Right. I'm sure that there's something in there, and it will be revealed to us. I definitely think we're going to see more of Anita. It's nice to see...
I think Anita's going to get into some trouble.
Mike. Yeah. Mike, because Mike likes her, so you have to come protect her or something. Yeah, I could see that happening.
That she's either into some trouble or her husband's name was Alan. Like,
the other thing I thought was interesting was we got to see Mike's cash stash, too, which is not hurting for cash at all.
No.
He's got... plenty of it, so we know that the jobs and stuff that he is taking, it's not that he's at a point, like, obviously he's providing for them, but he's not hurting for cash.
I feel
he's
like
not
he,
doing it out of necessity.
They never explicitly say this, but I feel like he works the toll booth at a court for the, because it's a city job and you probably just get insurance.
Yeah,
because people who are cash rich like that, what they really need are benefits.
Yeah,
what they really need are benefits and to a certain extent, an income to wash.
To look, yeah, right. To
an
look.
Income to wash all their money. And, you know,
that makes sense, actually.
And he never usually... And he always works in the midnight shift. Like, it's all very much... It's all very much he just wants to put up...
It's set up
perfectly. Yeah, if anyone comes sniffing, it's like, I'm just
and
an old man who works at toll booth.
He's the top dog at the toll booth, too.
Yeah.
He tells his homie to cover him for a few minutes. He doesn't even flinch. He's like, yes. You got it, Mike.
24 ounce as in Datsun 24 ounce. Got it. Let's move on to Kim and Jimmy at that bar with, I mean, I'm just going to say it. That old fashioned didn't look great. It was an orange slice, not an orange peel.
Look, man, it's not about how it looks. It's about how it tastes. Okay.
It's an old fashioned though. Like that old fashioned looked like it had soda water.
Disagreeing
with you.
Which
is not an old fashioned.
You know, why waste good whiskey on a TV shot?
I would assume they use no whiskey. I'm just saying.
Right.
Real.
So how's it gonna look real? All right. So note to the production designer: orange peel, old fashioned.
Orange peel muddled with the sugar.
Right.
Bitters.
If you need someone to come in and make your old fashioned.
I have a Southwest card.
Better call Steve.
I can get out the ABQ.
Southwest card. He's ready. He's ready to go.
Burbank goes straight through.
That whole scene was really. At first, I was like, "Oh, this is nice. They're having a good time." But it got really intense, really quickly. When Kim obviously was just trying to have fun, I think, and I don't think Jimmy was. Like, I think he knew that they were just, like, joking, but I don't think he wanted to be just joking. I think he especially...
No, he absolutely... This episode, to me, definitely, when we touched on the first topic, that he's torn between being a con man and a salesman. And I think he ultimately, as we know him as Saul Goodman, is ultimately a con man.
Yeah. I think he's... Especially with the stuff that we saw him struggling with early in the episode, mm-hmm. he's reaching that breaking point of, like, okay, I'm trying to do things the right way, but it's not working for me. I'm not trying to be a loser, mm-hmm. And he's seeing all these, suckers or marks or whatever. Mm-hmm. He's reaching that point of, like, why am I over here struggling, feeling the way I'm feeling when I can do this? I could be really good at this too.
Yeah, like I could literally scam that person, swindle this person, hustle that person.
That guy was a dick too.
He
the
was
martini
really,
guy.
Yeah,
oh,
you know.
My God.
But I, with the con man thing, I do find it interesting that he has all the qualities of a salesman, but he finds it easier to sell someone nothing than to sell them something. Like he's having trouble selling them something.
Yeah,
he has an actual thing, and he's having trouble selling that.
The best thing that he's good at selling at is himself.
Yeah,
and I think that's what makes him such a great lawyer. Because even when he's arguing a case, he can sell himself to the jury, the judge, or whatever that they can trust him. And that's why he's able to tell them whatever he needs to tell them, and they
believe
him.
Yeah, because he's the product.
Exactly, and that's why even when we see the commercials that he's done before, they're great. Because of him.
Yeah.
The production design is clever and stuff, but his delivery is always what makes them like, oh, wow, that's really good.
Because they're great because he's selling himself. He knows himself.
He knows the product. He knows how to talk about it. Mm-hmm. He knows,
And he knows to downplay what the product isn't. The product isn't a law firm. The product is him as a lawyer.
Right. Exactly. He knows his strengths. He knows what they're going to be getting. So it's a lot easier for him to sell that than as opposed to the commercial thing, which he did not plan. He wasn't like, all right, I'm going to get into commercial business. It just kind of fell into it. Like, I have to recoup this money. I know these film students that I've worked with before.
Also, who in the chat helped us out? Because we... Rafael Narvaez... The writing's really small, guys. He had 9 weeks use on as Saul Goodman, and he sold one to the sofa guy. So we're on 8.
Okay.
We're on 8 weeks of commercials left to dump. And I guess he is trying to dump them. That seems to be his MO. The question becomes... With this malpractice scene, I don't think this was his plan. I think that breakdown was. His plan was to go in there and try to get a refund
for sure,
and then somewhere in the middle, he just decided, oh, it's the same firm. And I think the breakdown was legitimate, but was part of a semi bluff.
I agree with you. I think he actually had a breakdown. Mm-hmm. I think when he initial, especially the initial tears, even just in the way that he presents it. Bob Odenkirk is a fantastic actor, and I think he's very underrated for his ability to actually do serious work. And you can see the difference in his initial breakdown and the frustration in his face and the tears and stuff. And then later, as he starts to transition to talking about his brother,
yeah,
all of a sudden it starts to look really corny. It starts to look fake, at least to me. Like,
with
I
a
could
little of this.
Right.
A little of this,
and,
but I
and
think...
And just the, you can even just the way that, like, the tension in, like, his eyes, like, releases, you can almost see his wheels turning and him to start to think, as opposed to just being, like, defeated and crushed like he was beginning, when he was just like, shit, I'm not getting this money back.
And they're going to up my rates 150%.
And they're going to up my rates 150%. I knew that was coming, too. And she said she was going to up it. I'm like, it's going to be, like, double.
Well, of course. And, like, that's unfortunate, but...
I mean, yeah.
I think he knew that.
If I was, yeah, if I was a malpractice insurer, I would do the same thing.
I would absolutely do the same thing.
His suggestion of him then pausing the coverage, and then if he gets sued, they can resume the coverage.
What was funny is, I feel like there was a lot of lawyery things he could have done that he couldn't do because he's not a lawyer.
Right.
One of which would be to, like, try to tear apart the contract.
Yeah, dispute the contract or something.
But they're aware he's not a lawyer.
Well, but the only thing I would say to that point is that if you are a malpractice insurer, I'm sure that all of your contracts and legal documents are tight.
Yes.
Because all of your customers are lawyers, so they're all going to go through anything you sign them on or anything, they're going to go through with a fine-tooth comb. So I think that it would be very difficult for him to find some type of loophole just because of the nature of the business. It's not some business that deals with, you know, civilians all the time who don't read the contracts. A lawyer is the first person who's going to read the contract front to back.
I could buy that. So I didn't get your full thoughts on this. Do you think he was walking into there trying to get a refund and then he pivoted? Or do you think that his plan all along was to just get Chuck?
I don't think that was his plan. I think he walked in there trying to get a refund, had his breakdown, and in his breakdown, he
changed up a couple words to be like, oh, wait, she's looking at both of our names
right.
on the screen
right now. Well, I think
right
it, it hit him. He was like, wait a minute. She said his name earlier, and I think, I don't know where the switch happened, where it went off in his head. I don't think it was until, for me, I don't think it was like till mid breakdown that something just went off that he realized he could pull it in his favor. But I also think it just kind of shows not only how low he's feeling, but how petty he's gotten to be against his brother, because I understand his feelings of frustration towards his brother, but I think he even knows, like, even when he said, I think he was really genuine. He was like, you know, my brother is sick. I left him alone. I just took care of him. Like, yeah, your brother's a dick. He puts you in that really shitty situation. I think he deserved what he got coming for him. But at the end of the day, Jimmy cares. He's still his family. He still actually cares about his relationship with his brother. So for him to go from that breakdown to, you know what, I'm already here. Let me drag someone else down with me, you know, his brother. Especially on the flip side, when we've seen Kim feel so guilty all episode.
I do enjoy that difference, that Kim literally, and the exact quote to Paige was, all we did was take down a sick man.
It was brutal.
Like, there's nothing, I'm not proud about anything I did. In fact, in that bar scene, one of the first things she said was like, was there anything else we could have done? Like, did we have to take him down like that? Which is just such a different thought from where Jimmy is, like, I don't care, he's not even my brother. He's just some guy. He's in the rear view. I need to come up with...
I think it's a lot more personal for Jimmy. And I think, honestly, I think the majority of the guilt just comes from, what's her name? Chuck's ex-wife.
Not Margaret.
Starts with an A?
Not Anita. I did not write it on the board.
Elizabeth?
Elizabeth sounds relatively good.
I'm sorry. I'm terrible.
IMDb's never any help with
Chuck's
these things.
Ex-wife. What she said, I think, really stuck with her. I'm sure someone in the chat will correct us. I think it really stuck with her. That's what she has been, like, resonating on. And I think that's honestly the only reason why she started to feel guilty. Because I think, especially with her experience with Chuck already, and then her experience with the situation firsthand, even knowing that Jimmy actually did, you know, lie and change the numbers, Yeah, it's she is stuck on that reaction and how, you know, she made Chuck feel, and the way that she lashes out. You know, obviously she's going through a lot. She's super stressed with the work because we see her take that like 5-minute power nap, which I don't know if you've ever been there, but that's rough.
That's useless.
It's useless, but when you get no sleep, I've been there before where you set the alarm for 5-10 minutes because you know you are exhausted and you want to sleep, but you have no time. So then to see her come in and snap, you know, was out of character, I think, for Kim, especially in that professional setting.
Chuck's ex-wife is Rebecca.
Not even close.
Also, Matt Mamba in the chat just said the insurance employee looked like Gretchen from Breaking Bad. I had to do a quick search to make sure they were different actresses. Jean, I'm going to mispronounce her last name, Villela Peak, is who played the woman at the insurance company tonight. She also performs in the improv world that I also perform in.
Oh, cool.
So shout out to her, as I don't pronounce her name correctly.
It's a good performance.
Yeah, very good.
But like, not the same actress, is what you're saying.
Not the same actress as Gretchen. Correct. Gretchen from Dark Matter, yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Gray Matter Gretchen is how I'll remember her. Different people.
Okay.
Different people. Someone in the chat said they might be the same person. I had to quick double check the different people.
Now we know for sure.
In the Breaking Bad-iverse.
It's pretty extended.
The Breaking Bad averse. We're workshopping names, guys.
Side characters.
The extended Breaking Bad universe. The EBDU.
I'm sure there's a Wikipedia, a Breaking Bad Wikipedia. Yeah.
Oh, I've been on it. They like to wait till the season's over.
But that makes sense. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that you don't catch until you go back and you don't realize that they're connected.
And like this is also a show that some people just don't watch until it winds up on Netflix. So I'm sure there's a moratorium on spoilers.
I feel like shows like this and also with Breaking Bad, there's so much, like, again, there's, not to say other shows have filler, but other shows have filler. And shows like this, there is no filler. Every frame, every line means something. It's a cumulative project. So in my opinion, when you're binging shows, it makes it difficult to absorb all those details because, especially when you start watching one after another.
Yeah.
I mean, I love watching TV, but I can't keep my attention that long without looking at my phone or something. Then you start missing scenes. And especially something that is, you know, this show is, in my opinion, less heavy and stressful than as like Breaking Bad was. But Breaking Bad had so much tension in each episode.
What I find interesting is the stakes in Breaking Bad were so high. Whereas the stakes in this show, comparatively, aren't, but they still feel, like, the stakes still feel just as high.
Well, I think the stakes have been very personal.
Yeah.
So, like, relationships and, you know, in some cases, people's lives. But, you know, relationships have been a core of things that are, you know, in danger. So I think in that regard, it's still very relatable while still being very tense. But I just like having time to unpack the episode and think about it and prepare for the next one. You know, as much as I would like to just watch the next one, especially after a good cliffhanger, I think in terms of viewing experience, I think it's a little bit better.
Yeah. I think on that note, we can jump right into predictions.
I'm ready for it.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
We saw the previews last week. How I like to do predictions, I like to come up with a couple questions for us to work through, and then we do predictions at large. Now I have to think of the questions. Now,
do it.
Do we think Jimmy/Saul dumps all the commercial time next week?
No.
I could buy that.
I would like to see that happen, but I don't. I think we will reach some type of resolution. I don't know if he's going to find some buyer that, for some reason, actually buys up the slots, or if he eventually lets go of them and some other opportunity comes. I don't want to say I'm tired of seeing these scenes, but like, I get it. He's trying to unload these time slots. It's not working. You know, he's getting less and less of opportunities. I'd like to see, you know, some evolution on that storyline front.
I don't know much about malpractice insurance. But do we think it just hits Hamlin McGill in the pocketbook? Or do we think it calls into question Chuck McGill as a lawyer?
I think it's gonna be that. I think it's gonna be I think it's going to start as just them changing some type of filing or something to show that he had a breakdown, and then Howard's going to freak out, and I think that's why we saw that teaser of him approaching Kim in some regard. I think maybe that it's going to blow up to this big thing. I don't know, maybe if we're talking disbarment or if just... I don't think
it's anything like that. I think whatever happens, it's not going to happen by the bar. It's going to happen... I think the malpractice insurance might go through the roof, and then everyone in the lawyer world might hear about it and go, why? Mm-hmm. And then the bar hearing is already public.
Right.
So people who would have otherwise not read it will read it and read that he had a breakdown, and it becomes
more well-known.
Or
even just Howard May, maybe it just is not good for the Hamilton and McGill name. Just... even just the idea that, you know, the malpractice stuff is going up, and that's causing them pressure of them. They have to push them out, or in some regard.
You're right that even it might only be the threat of what I'm predicting. The fact that the malpractice insurance people call Howard and straight up say,
hey, what's going on?
We read the transcript. I think if he remains partner, we're going to have to up the rates. If we up the rates, everyone's going to know about it and read about the transcript that's not sealed. And it could do your whole firm. We, as your malpractice insurer, would not want that, because we would like you to pay us every year. All we're letting you know as a courtesy is, given this transcript, we will be upping your rates by this publicly, unless he's no longer your name partner.
Mm-hmm. I could see that definitely happening. And then just the threat of it being enough for Howard to try to make something happen.
Or, well, the threat of it would be enough for Howard to literally just force Chuck out. Chuck, who's already completely broken. And a firm that had been operating without him.
I don't think it would be just that easy for him to force him out. I think we would definitely see some conflict. I don't think, even Chuck in the stink that he's in, I don't think he could just be booted right out the door. I don't really know. But I think that we would get some type of a fight from him to not
I think he'd stay and fight, but I think ultimately Howard could...
Right.
Because Howard's managing partner. I think Howard could just straight up take him out.
I have no idea how that lawyer firm hierarchy works.
I think it's different show to show. I'm on other lawyer shows.
Yeah, and state to state, county to county.
Power structure to power structure. They might report to a board, and the board could vote.
Maybe we have to get the other Hamlin.
The other Hamlin, or like... there's the name partners, then there's the managing partner, and then there could be a whole board of just senior partners.
We're getting too technical.
I know. It's like, but there could be a board of senior partners that Howard ultimately reports to as managing partner.
Right.
That he runs the day-to-day, and then that board makes the money.
Right. And I could even see, if that is the case, the board making the decision of like, okay, we've done enough. We can't be tied with him anymore. And Howard being the one being like, well, come on, like... you know, and trying to defend him.
And I could see Howard maybe doing some type of shuck and jive to leave Chuck with something.
Mm-hmm.
Leave Chuck with, like, a silent senior partnership.
I think he wants to... He very much wants to preserve the firm, but I think he also has a lot of respect for Chuck.
Yeah. It's interesting. Do you have any predictions at large?
I definitely think... you know, the stuff with Mike and Nacho and stuff is going to pop off. I'm curious to see... I'm almost positive that Saul is going to get tied into what's going on with him. I feel like he has to in some regard.
Yeah.
At this point, I don't see how at all, but I think it's got to happen.
Well, I think two things that we know for sure out of this episode. One is that Saul's clearly a live-in-the-gray area... con man style person. We've always known that about Saul Goodman. And two, he needs money. What we know about the Nacho Mike price situation is that there is money flying, that Mike made $3,000 just to show up that one time.
Mm-hmm.
$10,000 could float Saul through all of his problems, through all of his current problems right now. So on the pure numbers, we're in a place that for Saul to get involved in some way, there'd be money to be had.
Yeah, it's definitely lucrative for him. The question is just how.
Yeah.
In what regard do they need him? That's
I don't see that either.
That's where I don't see it. I definitely, you know, it would solve a lot of his problems, and I also think it would. And I think that it's I think it's going to be interesting because him getting that money from, you know, the illegal source he gets it from will solve his problems and help him with his relationship with Kim until Kim finds out what type of dubious means that he got it from. Because it's one thing for him to be, like, scamming people, whatever, for these commercials under the table. It's another thing to be involved in murder and, you know, drug dealing and all the other stuff that happens. Because that, I think for Kim, that's beyond her scope of, like, you know, looking the other way.
Matt Mamba in the chat. Chuck is going to start to break the law to try and stop Jimmy.
I would like to see that.
I would like to see that.
Especially if he gets pushed out of Ham and McGill.
Where he's got nothing.
Right.
He's got nothing but time.
Time and resources, because he's still got a check.
Yeah, and then... So next week, there's no episode. I think when we come back and then up through the end, I think... Okay, I have two predictions. I have a two-part prediction. Either Chuck immediately gets forced out of Hamlin, Ham and McGill, and then starts... And then starts going after Jimmy. Or Chuck gets forced out of Hamlin, Ham and McGill, and it looks like he's completely on the outs. And then at the end of this season, we set up a season four arc, or a like a 5 to 6 episode season four arc, where Chuck is just going after Jimmy. And it'll be after Jimmy had overcome whatever he overcomes in the next 3-4 episodes. It looks like financial trouble, and then, like, a self-discovery.
I could see that happening.
Of who is he if he isn't a lawyer.
I'm just hoping, like, this is going to sound bad. I'm hoping that we get the end of Chuck this season. Ooh. Either him dying or, like, going away to a mental hospital or something. Because I feel like a lot of the plot has just kind of run its course. They're now in this ever-ending battle of... Chuck is just done with Jimmy, and Jimmy, you know, feels bad, and he loves his brother, but at the same time, like, he's like, you know what, I've done enough also. So, I mean, I guess I could see them reconcile, but at this point, I'm honestly not really interested in it. I don't care enough about their relationship, you know, as working together, and also in regards to how I feel about Chuck. I don't think, honestly, that he deserves to be forgiven, you know, as much as, once again, Jimmy did lie, but... just the way that Chuck went about everything.
I think the most this show way to end this season between the two of them would be that they both just kind of let bygones be bygones and be like,
yeah, I think
you're a scumbag, I'm an a-hole, my brothers, prediction is, see you at Thanksgiving.
In the way that this show does things that just kind of happen, like the way real life does, I think they'll have some type of, like, epiphany, reconciliation or something, and then Chuck will, like, die immediately right after. Or like, on the way, and, like, Chuck dies, so, like, it never happens or something. But
he gets hit by a bus that's being driven by Hector Salamanca.
And so Hector gets in the accident.
Walter White is on the bus. This changes his life. We just don't know about
it. And this is when
it.
Walter goes to the hospital and finds out from a routine checkup of the bus accident that he's got, you know, stage 1 cancer.
Wow.
In the first discovery.
That ties everything together.
Yeah. We just, you know.
Like a rug in Great Lebowski.
That's a great reference.
I should always end on my great references.
I think that's you gotta end on a high note.
So this has been fun. Let us know in the comments what you think. Strategy, please. Story, predictions
Correct
wise.
Us. Correct me on names.
However, in real life, where can the people find you on Twitter?
You guys can find me at DogLikeNate on Instagram and Twitter. Again, my name is Nate Miller. I also host the Silicon Valley After Show.
And of course, you guys can find me on Twitter at Steve Kaufman. That is KAUFMANN. I do a lot of shows here at AfterBuzz TV. I tweet about them fairly regularly, including this next Sunday. It will be The Leftovers. It's happening.
I'll be watching and reading your tweets.
Things. The Leftovers. 2 weeks left on The Leftovers. 2 weeks from now, it'll also be WWE Extreme Rules. I'll be covering that.
That I won't be watching, but...
Well, you know. There's still time.
Different strokes for different folks.
I'm also on an improv team that is exclusively Harry Potter based. You can find it. We are the Show That Shall Not Be Named. We are at Show That Shall on Twitter. We do a lot of shows all around Southern California, and I've been in some meetings kind of all around the country now. So follow us on Twitter. You'll get the first shot at those tickets. And thank you.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Better call you later.
From executive producers Maria Menounos,
the views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.